and Facebook Live video going. Go ahead and get the podcast audio internally recording. And Blog Talk Radio Live. All right, but yeah, that audio, that was from Actify Chat with Sammy Keys about the MPP and getting active. Go to Actify Chat on the YouTubes, subscribe, good content. They are very measured, they are very calm, I dig their stuff. They research it, they're fresh, and I like to play them at the beginning of the program. All right, now for this one, Phoenix Kaleeder will be getting on with Tim Woodman. Yes. And until Tim Woodman gets on, I'll actually go ahead and open this thing up and hit a couple of headlines that I find interesting. All right, so let's get down to the funky stuff, if you will. How's that work there? What the hell is going on here?
You broke it.
In Father Teresa's wine cellar, we believe all oppression is intersectional. And this means our analysis of current events frequently includes discussion of difficult and explicit content. Any combination of the following topics could be included in our show: murder, rape, war, climate change, racism, sexism, violence, sexual violence, homophobic violence, heterocentrism, discrimination and abuse against individuals of nonconformist sexuality, domestic violence, child abuse, child rape, child neglect, elderly abuse, verbal abuse, police brutality, microaggressions, ableism, cyberbullying, genital mutilation, ideological extremism, and people just being total fucking assholes.
Alright, WineCellarMedia.com. And this is William J. Jackson, a.k.a. Black Ass Father Mucker. And let's go ahead and take a look over here. The Facebook Live is going. Got notifications, got whatnot, got what have you. Now, let's take a look here at what little bit that I can take a look at before I Tim Woodman comes on here, which Phoenix Kaleeder is going to be at speaking engagements with, and then out here in Illinois, and then Phoenix Kaleeder is going to be out in California, involved in speaking engagements. Now, a man in Toronto was sexually abused 50 years ago by a predatory priest and awarded $2.6 million. All right. Now, no need to get too much into the detail of that one. It's just, hey, it's okay to get justice from the past. Like, if you're against women coming forward about rape from the past, then, nigga, you should be against reparations, too. Go fuck yourself. All right? Happened. It was a long time ago. Shut the fuck up, nigga. The fucking Bill Hive. I swear to niggas told me the Bay Hive. The Beyonce Hive. That those were the wild niggas on the internet that couldn't let shit go. Oh, no. No, 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 no. It's the fucking Bill Hive. Becky Lives Matter. Becky's late-term abortion matters.
5 minutes. Risk is too grave for some people for which the flight risk is too grave. And that's why usually people who are going up on murder charges don't get right on. Phil Spector being one of the guys who did, but almost nobody else. Why her?
Because she has strong, the court decided she has strong ties to the community. She's not a flight risk. She has appeared at all of her hearings. She's cooperated. And she's also going to be subject, Ashley, to random drug tests, random home visits, and she's going to have to wear a GPS monitor at all times. So the court weighed all that and felt like this was a fair resolution.
So I guess I want to ask about weighing the community's sensibilities as well, because already there were people frustrated or thought it was special treatment that she got to stay at home instead of a cell. You know, Casey Anthony was in ISO for the entire time before she was exonerated, right? She was acquitted.
Yeah.
But Brooke now will be out at the, you know, at the Safeway and everywhere else. And I'm wondering if the community has a right here as well.
I mean, that's a good point, but I think what's happening here, Ashley, is the judge probably looked at her age, for example. She's young. Maybe she's dealing with some issues you know, as a 19-year-old. And my guess is that the judge actually gave her a little bit more of a hall pass, especially with the $50,000 initial bond you mentioned. That's pretty ridiculous. But I think age and maturity level played into the court doing this. And you know as well as I do, the rules are not always cut and dry when it comes to this.
All right. Rules aren't always cut and dry, okay? So when you are a yellow-headed hot gal and you go ahead and just have yourself a little baby and you kill it, well, you should just kind of be out there, you know, down at the Safeway. Gave birth after the prom and then buried it in the backyard is what she did.
I appreciate the fact also it doesn't say anything accused killer cheerleader. Like, you have to know she's a blonde cheerleader. That's a very important part of the story.
Well, yeah. Because that means that she could go be a real cheerleader in the NFL and be a slave. And also not allowed to post anything on the Instagram, and you have to block all the football players from your Instagram, and the football players have an NFL-wide restraining order against you by default of you being a cheerleader, which means if you're sitting down in an establishment that serves food-like products, and a football player walks in, you have to fucking leave.
Hmm.
Yeah. Cheerleaders are fucking... shit, damn, I'm about to use some old school misogyny. Gussied up slaves.
Gussied up.
Gussied up slaves. That's what the fuck NFL cheerleaders are. Let it be known if you didn't already know. For some people, it's just a reminder. It's one of those things, like every 3 years you click on a link, you're like, oh, that's right. That's what they do. That's right. And like, I don't even look at them ever. Like, that's the least, like, I turn on football so I can see men get hurt. Like, it's recreational misandry. Like,
recreational misandry.
I'm looking for the injuries.
We need to popularize the term recreational misandry. That's fucking awesome, first of all.
That's all that's really going on when I'm watching the foosball. Like, motherfuckers aren't excited. Like, what do we want to see? Big hits. Which ones do we play the most back on the YouTube these days? But at what was that, a Chicago Bear? One of them niggas got like folded.
Yeah, that was
backwards.
I think his name was Johnny Knox. Yeah.
Johnny, you showed me that shit.
Yeah, that nigga still can't walk right.
Yeah, I was like,
that was like 4 or 5 years. That nigga still can't walk right.
Yeah, like, he did something. All right, what in the holy heck darn else is going on here with these colored boys? You can find this shit on the WineCellarMedia.com, the website, where it is Phoenix Kalita and Tim Woodman. And we have that Becky Lives Matter story. There's a video, and we linked to it. We didn't directly embed the video to us. And it's a video showing a trans woman being attacked while a police officer turns a blind eye, a little ableist language there for you.
Okay.
Coming off of where? Pinknews.co.uk. They do a good job. and I played the video, and like, you don't really see a great deal. You can mostly hear the screaming. And it's a video of a trans woman being assaulted while police stood by and watched in Iran. And as usual, they say it's gone viral. We need to just stop saying anything has ever gone. Like, gone viral means outside of echo chambers. Like, the Wine Cellar is talking about it. It's on peaknews.co.uk. I'm quite sure it's on The Advocate, right?
Yes.
Big Gay News probably covered it. That's not viral.
Yeah.
That's not, like, what? Them niggas over at Where Your Voice Mag don't know this story happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like everybody isn't covering this shit. Like, we're misusing the word viral. All right, but in the video, which was originally posted to the Facebooks by Iranian feminist activists, the woman in emits a...
I think that might be
a... Okay, send a text message to us, see if this is the individual Tim Woodman ready to come on the program. And in the video originally posted to the Facebooks, there's a blood-curdling scream as she is attacked by a gang, as they say. Now, although a police feller is sat in a car right next to the attack, he simply ignores the crime and attempts to drive across the square. And that report came from Gay Star News. And then the embedded video when the website is there, trigger warning to you if you're about to click it. Now, in the video, a woman confronts the police fella about his lack of action and asks him if he is ignoring the attack because she is a trans. Because she is trans. I remixed that sentence. Mm-hmm. Now, quote, "Why aren't you helping her? You shouldn't drive away. You should help them." And, end quote. And then she adds, to which the police feller shrugs. And another quote, "But look at what they look like," said the police feller, responding to the cis woman. The video was posted by the group called White Wednesdays, which is an Iranian movement that encourages women to wear white on Wednesday to protest the legal obligation for women to wear headscarves in the country. Although it is illegal to be openly gay in the country, trans rights are recognized in Iran.
See, I hate that shit, though. Like, these rights are recognized, but in reality, we're not going to actually do anything when someone beats your ass and tries to kill you for being trans.
Yeah, like literally a story about your rights not being recognized. Like this, everybody's having a good time. Did you get me? Excuse me.
Bless
did you get messaged back? All right, you're having a... Phoenix Cletus over there having a blast.
Is it a 3-2-3?
Yes.
That would be it.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and clip this off short. This episode is not your typical news and comment. This is Phoenix Cletus and Tim Woodman. And bring that on. All right, yeah. And Tim Woodman, your mic is hot.
Howdy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm in one piece.
Yeah, so you are in Chicago visiting and working and talking, and then tomorrow we have an event to do. So, hi, this is the Wine Cellar. Welcome to the podcast. The sun's all up in my face.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Tim is a sex worker, professional porn entertainer. Is that the term I'm looking for here?
You can use any term you like, but those are accurate, yeah.
So, we're going to do kind of a free thought conversation type of thing, just chill, hang out, see what happens. You had mentioned a few things that you wanted to talk about. Where would you like to start?
If it's all right, let's talk about why I'm in town and why we're going to see each other tomorrow.
Absolutely.
I volunteer for a group called the Center for Positive Sexuality, which is a nonprofit research and education group that tries to raise awareness and address social issues through a sex-positive lens, and, you know, try and improve the world that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we occasionally, a lot of what we do is give talks, panel presentations and other kind of talks at colleges and universities for psych majors and social majors and student groups and professional therapists and whoever else wants us. And we're starting a chapter out here in Chicago, and they asked whether we could do a presentation on sex workers. And at the moment, none of our volunteers in Chicago are sex workers. Hmm. So the center agreed to fly me out to talk, and you were nice enough to say you'd come with me.
Yes, absolutely. And what are we talking about tomorrow?
We're going to dispel some myths and hopefully lay down some facts about what sex work is and isn't, and enlighten some college students' minds.
I hope we get to enlighten some people. That'll be fun. I'm super excited, actually. I think I'm almost getting the hang of this speaking thing. I know, right? Last year was my first time. So last year when I was at Catalyst Con, that was the first time that I kind of had like a serious speaking type gig. And Tim was kind enough to sit through my presentation and not be like super offended because I talked about racism a lot.
I would never have... I would never have guessed that was your first presentation. You were so smooth, so professional. I was blown away.
Oh, thank you. No, I was actually vomiting in my room like 45 minutes before you saw me. So it was, you know, just
no. You were fantastic.
Show up and get it done. But yeah, so that was actually fun doing it. And of course, you're going to be there again this year, right? So I'm going to see you tomorrow and then see you Thursday.
I have a dentist appointment, so we're going to see. I got to get my old chompers worked on.
Okay. Yeah, so...
But I hope to. If not, if you have some free time, I'll pick you up to dinner afterwards.
Absolutely. So yeah, it was really great to go last year. I had a lot of fun doing it, and I'm excited to do it again, too. But yeah, and then tomorrow we're going to dispel some myths around the sex work industry, which I'm sure our listeners are like now naming and pointing out everything, because we talk about sex work a lot on this show, on this podcast. Like, I remember you said, like, yeah, our listeners are awesome, actually. Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. I'm sorry. I'm like all moving around trying to do stuff. We need another room. Like, we need an office space for this podcast. We just don't have enough space in here. Like, we're in the bedroom. The bed's right here. Everything is just in the way. All right. So we're doing that tomorrow. We're going to dispel some myths. We're going to educate and inform and be awesome and amazing. Now, your particular, niche occupation is being male talent in BDSM films, yeah?
That's correct. I started out doing bondage, and I kind of do all of the BDSM things now.
So how does that go? How did you get into that?
I like to say completely by accident, although friends that have known me from before porn just kind of go, well, duh, and like they all knew this is where I'd end up, and I didn't. But it was just a series of coincidences. I knew some people who invited me to do a thing, and it turned out I was really good at it, and I kept doing it, and here and now I have a career.
That's really awesome. So
I mean, I wish there was a bitchin' story behind it, but there really isn't.
So now, I don't know. I don't know a lot of male performers at all. So what do you do differently than female performers have to do? Or, like, I don't know. How does it work?
Well, again, because I specialize in BDSM, what's nice is that there's a culture of consent and negotiation that is already programmed into who and what I am. Because this is, I do this in my private life as well. I'm a kinky fucker. And you get really well trained to listen and respond and not push people's boundaries and learn how to play, you know, in someone's sandbox without violating anything.
That's actually really awesome.
As male talent, go ahead.
I said that's awesome.
Oh, thanks. As male talent, my primary concern is the well-being of my coworker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're holding ropes, you're going to tie somebody down and throw a whip at their ass, or, you know, stick a giant dildo in them or whatever else. There is immense potential to abuse that situation of power, or just by not listening, cause somebody a lot of emotional and bodily harm. So my whole task for the day is to get out without having damaged or upset my coworker.
Yeah.
Now, and way, way down the line, I want to give a good performance. I want to look mean and nasty and horrible and keep my little balloon animal inflated for the whole show. But my main concern is only that the female talent leaves the day unscathed.
That's actually really nice. Do you think, I mean, I don't know, is there more issues around consent in non-BDSM aspects of porn?
I think it's just better discussed. I think there's just as many issues in what may look like a beautiful, you know, romantic, sensual porn scene, because there's still don't touch me there, or I like this, or please don't do that, or you can do that but softly, or that's going to trigger, you know, don't pull my hair, or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it gets talked about as much in a mainstream environment that it does in kinky stuff, where we're so used to asking every question, you know?
Right. So what is your all-time favorite scene you did?
All-time favorite? Jeez, that's, you know, a gentleman doesn't play favorites. but I got... I mean, who am I going to offend by not mentioning? But I had a really, really wonderful scene just before I left town. I got to play a crazy bank robber, and I got to abduct the bank manager and her security guard and tie them both down and violate them and murder them at the end. Which, for me, is a really fun day's work. And I got to work with two people I'm very fond of.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just giggling. Every time the camera cut, we were just giggling and laughing and peeling at the ruined duct tape or whatever else. But then when the camera's running, they're all screaming in tears and I'm all grunting in rage. And
Right.
It was a great time. We had a whole lot of fun.
That's nice. You know, it's nice when you get to enjoy your job.
I love my job.
So how long have you been
I'm fond of saying, you know... Oh, Jesus, this is 22 years this month.
Oh,
I started
wow.
on Easter in 96.
Okay.
Yeah,
wait, did you say Easter?
I remember VHS tapes.
Okay.
It was Easter Sunday, yeah. Of all things.
Why are all my friends fucking heathens? Annalise. That's fun. All right. Let's see. What else have we got here? Oh, now, you said in your personal life you also engage in BDSM, but you're also poly.
Mm-hmm.
So how...
Have been from the beginning, since before porn.
All right. So how does that all work out? How do you balance all that?
Well, you know, at the time, I hadn't heard that term yet. I know it existed, but not really outside of a couple of hippie communes. I just had realized that for me, monogamous relationships didn't work.
Okay.
It was just not working in my personal life. Somebody would cheat on somebody or just feel guilty about thinking things about someone else or whatever else. And I'm like, this is dumb. I just kept coming to this is dumb.
Okay.
And it so happened I met a delightful young lady and we were talking and I'm like, I just wish I had a lot of good friends and that we fucked each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd rather fuck my friends than strangers.
Right.
And I'd rather not be, feel like, and she was like, yeah, I feel that way too. And we felt desperately in love and we've been together ever since and we're polyamorous. And for me, the foundation of that and the most important part of it is that I love her. I never want to feel like I stopped her from having something she might want, whether it's like, I don't like barbecues. Sauce, so she never gets ribs, or I don't, you know, whatever it might be, from something stupid to something sexy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to limit her existence with mine. That's not love to me. That's ownership. And I don't want to feel that kind of limitation either. I don't want to feel like I would love to do this thing, but she won't let me.
Mm-hmm.
And we both agreed that that's not, at least for us, the foundation of who we are.
That actually sounds incredibly healthy and well-balanced.
Thank you. I like to think so.
Yeah. Now,
it's not, I mean, people, my brother is very monogamous. He's like a Texas poster child for normal, heteronormative. I mean, he's got like a wife and three kids and a dog and a picket fence. He seems really happy. I'm going to leave him alone. But it's not, that doesn't work for me.
Right. Okay. Now, when you have, I don't know, I don't say like difficulty or frustration maybe, because I'm just guessing that some of your partners in your personal life are like, hey, I saw this movie you're in, can you do that? Does that happen a lot?
Not terribly often. It has happened, and certainly like any minor celebrity, and although it's relatively minor, I guess I'm kind of celebrity, someone may fall in love with my online persona or my stage persona, and although Tim Woodman is definitely me, I'm a lot more than him. And so when somebody like becomes infatuated with him and the things that he can do, those are all things that I can do, but they're not the extent of who I am, you know? You know, it's not that I don't love doing them. It's just I don't like to be pigeonholed any more than anybody else does.
Okay. So how do you balance not being pigeonholed in relationships then? Because I think that that's... Oh, go ahead.
I know a lot of people in the adult entertainment industry who refuse to date non-performers because it's just too much hassle. And I can get that, but in my case, I almost never date performers.
Okay.
Because there's a sense of this is who I am, and I've been very fortunate that most of the people I'm attracted to have met me from some other walk of life and already know me from the BDSM community or some other way, and then they find out about my adult stuff, and if they're cool with that, then we can hang out.
Okay.
But it's not like they already think that that's me, you know?
Okay, I got it, I got it. Let's see. Is there anything else you wanted to mention about BDSM, porn, being poly?
Geez, I don't even know. I have a great time doing it, and I'm not blind to the faults within our industry, because everybody immediately says that, don't you all have diseases, or aren't you all just like working for some pimp or whatever, and they get so tired of hearing that. And it's not that none of that exists, of course, but in my personal experience on this planet, every other industry I've ever worked in has been way more misogynistic and sexist and chauvinistic and abusive. I've worked for governments, I've worked in City Hall, and those people are fucking horrible compared to the enlightenment I've seen within most of the adult community. maybe not all of it, but most of it.
So what is the sex worker myth or porn myth that irritates you the most?
One, that it's not safe or somehow immoral. And I mean, morality is a very personal issue. So if it's immoral to you, I can't argue that with you. But for me, I'm very respectful of the people I work with, and I admire them greatly. And we're not all just a big pile of junkies who don't have any self-respect or self-worth. That's kind of the obvious go-to one. Mm-hmm. And the other one is that we can't have healthy, happy relationships. And I've been in a healthy, happy, open, polyamorous relationship since before porn. And so clearly that's not entirely true either.
Yeah, I find that the everybody has an STD thing is really weird. Especially, like, I think these days, because mm-hmm. there's the whole, like, hookup culture thing. It's like, oh, yeah, I just, you know, go to a bar or go to a club and just hook up. And I'm like, you know, and it's wild. So when people talk about, so like, you know, like, we can't legalize sex work because everybody has an STD. And I'm like, maybe y'all should start carrying around STD cards. Like, how often is the average person getting tested, really?
Right? Turn that finger around and point it at yourself, kids. How much unprotected sex does the average college student have in a drunken binge? Whereas I've seen test results for everybody I've stuck my dick in the last 20 years.
Yep. Yeah, that is really one of the most interesting. Right? That is one of the weirdest myths of all time. I just don't. And, you know, it's, I think that it is tied to that morality kind of concept, because statistically speaking, if you're going out and having sex and not using protection, odds are you're going to have an STD, as opposed to people who are being tested regularly where this is their job. You know, there's the information about it. There's the, you know, like, we have to be healthy to work, you know, kind of thing. And
right.
I don't know. It's just such a bizarre thing. And I guess it's, well, sex is bad. So if you have sex for a living, you must be bad. And therefore, STDs are also bad. So it's all bad. And it's just like, where are people even coming up with these things? It's so weird to me. I don't know.
And so much of it just seems to me like a rationalization of the underlying misogyny that says women who are in control of their own sexuality are a threat.
Yes.
That's what it always comes down to. It's not that sex is bad. It's just sex that might cost a man money is bad.
Yes. Which is...
Right?
Yeah. It's unreal. The amount of misogyny
sex
is
fine when you're getting it for free.
Yeah, the amount of misogyny is just unreal.
That's just my opinion.
You know, and that's a funny... Well, not funny, but, you know, it's bizarre to me how many people will say, like, you know, porn is unhealthy because it's misogynistic, or it's depicting women in a bad light and all these kind of things. But then at the same time, it's like, have we looked around society? Like, Bill Cosby still has a fan base. He's a serial rapist and he has a fan base, you know? Or, you know, these every time a victim of domestic violence comes forward, it's like, oh, well, you know, women lie. Women lie. It's not, you know, like, and it's like, we tolerate rapists. We tolerate, you know, domestic violence is a joke. You know, it's like all these things are happening, but y'all want to be like, well, but porn is bad because sex and misogyny.
But porn is the problem,
Okay.
And you can use a girl in a bikini to sell work boots on a billboard, and that's fine. But if she actually tries to sell herself in the bikini, somehow that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, where's the logic in that?
Yeah, it's...
Where's the logic in that?
I don't know. I don't get it. I don't.
Not to mention, when they're saying porn is bad, they're referring to heteronormative porn.
Yes.
I mean, how is gay male porn, how's that depicting women in a bad light? That's dudes.
Well, it doesn't count as real because it doesn't fit the narrative. You know, narratives are very important.
Exactly.
Because those
indeed,
guys are...
Indeed, they are.
They're such misogynists, they won't even have a woman in there.
Oh, is that what it is? That's the real misogyny. Gay porn is the real misogyny because they don't let women be there.
Right. Yep.
You know, I actually saw...
Oh, my God, that's too funny.
I saw MRAs actually make an argument that porn is sexist against men because the penis is irreplaceable and all the camera time is spent on the woman. Yeah,
that's why.
MRAs are wild. Yeah.
Play with your dollar, buddy. Buy the porn you want and that'll do better.
They just like to complain. They, somehow everything is the fault of women when it comes to them. Like, it's honestly like, I lost my job because I didn't show up on time. It's a woman's fault. Like, what? How?
Right. You know? And can we talk about people actually making a cute term out of incel?
Oh my God. Yes, we can talk about that.
Why is that even a word? Why is that even a word? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, involuntary celibate.
It's always the same narrative.
It's
always some pudgy, mediocre guy saying, why won't hot women have sex with me for free? And I'm like, did you even hear what you said there?
Because William, my co-host, hates me, he made me listen to incel podcasts and YouTube videos yesterday. It was horrible. It was everything.
I saw that on your Twitter feed. I was so sad for you.
I was like, oh, why? It was everything that you would expect. It was this very mediocre-looking man, which was, I think I forgot to mention it on the podcast when we talked about it. But, you know, he didn't, like, dress well. His hair was, like, really greasy and gross. It's like you're not even trying to give off a good first impression of somebody who dresses well and has good hygiene. Like, so, like, already kind of a strike one. But, right. You know, he kept going on about this, like, what the fuck was it? Genetic superiority. Women want the genetically superior males that have good bone structure and they're tall, and that's why women hate short men. And I was like, Kevin Hart, short as fuck. He's married. What are you talking about? You know? And it's any excuse to blame women. And it's astounding to me that they feel so entitled to sex, and then they get mad because patriarchy is fucking them over. But they're like, but we need more patriarchy. Mm-hmm. That's going to fix it. Let's make it worse, you know? Like, no. And of course, you know, they all feel entitled to sex, but they love to slut shame. So that's an interesting phenomena.
Right. Talk about hating the thing you love.
I hate incels so much.
It's embarrassing. I'm with you. I saw the word. I wasn't even going to bring it up because I knew we would both just start ranting. But I'm like, what? You're not entitled to anything.
Seriously.
Why do you even think that?
You know, and I think that, like, this whole rise of the incel thing is kind of intentional way to avoid talking about the real issues, you know, because you're like, well, it's just those incels. But it is ignoring the fact that men are constantly told they're entitled to have access to women's emotional labor, to women's bodies, to women's spaces, to, you know, everything that women have. And it's like, we can talk about all the problems with incels, because there are many. But at the same time, it's like, we also have to acknowledge that the reason incels are that way is because they've been told since birth, especially if they're white men, that they are entitled to everything they want because they're white men. You know? And it's like, incels are bad, but who made them? You know, how did they get here? And it's just, it's wild to me.
Yeah.
But, of course, those are the same people who will say porn is bad because it's misogynistic, and then, you know, not be mad about Brock Turner only serving 6 months in jail, you know? That kind of shit.
Right.
Hello,
sir. Yeah, that whole Brock Turner thing, too.
This is William Jackson. I'm the creator of the program. I'm mostly just engineering while Phoenix Kalita was doing a lot of the dialogue here, but something I'm interested in, because sex work is work, right, we tend to show up to our jobs and, you know, you don't just clock in and just immediately jump in and start working. There's typically, like, prep that goes on before you work. Like what type of prep do you do before a shift?
Oh, that's a great question. For one thing, I think this would be true of a lot of sex workers. Definitely true of me. An awful lot of my work is not on camera. It's hustling to find another job. It's promoting previous jobs that I've done, establishing and marketing my brand. But when I actually show up to a shoot, one, I bring all my supplies with me. So, like, I'm not looking for somebody else to have paper towels and germ killers and lube and whatever else. I make sure I'm self-contained. And when I get there, I make sure I know what is asked of me by the director, producer, whatever. And then I meet my coworker, and if we don't already know each other, or even if we do, we sit down and talk about what's going to happen that day and whether we're okay with all of it. At least in my experience, there's no, like, flirting ahead of time. There's no fluffing or feeling each other up and shit like that. I keep it in my pants so we're ready to go, you know? It's just that's professional to me. But the more knowledge we have ahead of time, the more comfortable we are standing next to each other, of course, the better the shoot's going to go.
All right,
is that kind of what you mean?
Yes, sir. So folks know, sex work is work. And back to you,
yes.
Phoenix.
Yes.
Good question. Thank you.
That is, I think, also a good topic in and of itself. Sex work is work, and it's astounding that people will consume porn and not think about the fact, well, we had to do makeup and lighting and have props and a kind of a script or a plot line, and, you know, we had to have all these tools and materials, but it's not work, you know?
Right.
There's all these people involved in the making of it, and I'm enjoying it and watching it, but I can't see how it's work, which, you know, I think, again, just dies back to anti-sex worker sentiment or anti-sex ideas, because people will watch movies. Like, people think actors have real jobs. They get makeup. They have to, you know, prep, rehearse, you know. And, you know, but somehow sex work is a porn isn't real work, but movies are. Pornographic movies.
Now,
at that.
Personally, I never use the word actor when describing myself because I wouldn't pretend to have that much skill or talent. I perform on a camera, but it definitely works. And in fairness, I mean, Jesus, I have so much fucking privilege. I'm a straight, white, well-educated male in America. I don't deserve to get to speak about anything. And the sex work I do is legal, so, like, I pay taxes and shit, and I'm not in any real danger.
Right.
So I have to, you know, be very, very humble when I talk about sex work and the trials of being a sex worker, because it doesn't affect me the way it affects most sex workers. Mm-hmm. But it definitely is work. And it's like the only way in which I'm not privileged is I do something that society frowns on.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be very, very careful when I answer these questions and not come off as an obnoxious, arrogant jackass.
I hope
I'm not doing that anyway.
I'm going to take a look at some stuff that some folks are saying in the chat space. The homie loco Jan's been checking out the program for some time, said, this is how I found the Wine Cellar podcast, listening, and they had good points. And then Jessica Loco, Jay May, commenting on the incels, women wreck everything on here. They're definitely being sarcastic. Yes, we are. Jan knows this is, for the most part, this is a comedy program that we make serious issues digestible.
We try, because otherwise you can't get people to pay attention to shit. I just wanted to go back for a second. You were talking about all the work that you do. How can you explain to us exactly how much time you spend promoting upcoming shoots or past shoots? Because I think a lot of people don't realize how much of sex work is, like, off camera fucking hustling.
I feel like it's 90%, maybe 95%. It's so much of it is I'm on social media talking about what I'm looking forward to. We have to be careful with that because I don't like to jinx things, and I don't want law enforcement to show up and ask to see my film permit. So I usually talk about shit that I just did or shit that I'm about to release or somebody else is about to release that has me in it. So people know where to find it if they're the kind of people that still pay for porn. But yeah, that's constant. That's every day I'm on social media, burning brain cells, promoting my brand, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I hope that if we start talking about these things more and explaining how much work goes into this sort of thing, that people maybe might start acknowledging it as work. I hope. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I kind of hope that it will, because I think that it is important to acknowledge how much labor goes in. And a lot of people who work in the sex work industry in general have to be very, very motivated. It's not like you can just show up and become a multimillionaire. You have to put in time with your branding. You have to put in time with your coworkers. You have to put in time doing the shoots, doing photography shoots, you know, being in movies, being in films, doing scenes, scheduling. Like, there's so much work that if it wasn't sex work, sex workers would be hailed as, like, these, you know, visionaries and these entrepreneurs and, you know, like, oh, look at this person. They made their own brand and they have their own website and they have their own, like, pictures done and they schedule their own clients and they, you know, pay taxes and do all these things. Like, that's amazing. You're so, you know, detail-oriented. You're a motivated person, you know, but it's like, and then it's like, well, but you're a sex worker, so none of that counts. It's not real anymore. Fuck,
exactly.
Man.
Exactly. Now I'm back to being a brainless moron, and all I am is a dick on a stick.
Yes. Everybody knows that. That's how sex work goes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And again,
sex work.
Respecting the work of it, right? Like I remember, I didn't watch pornography until after I was 18 because I actually did think like the FBI would kick in the door and take me down. I was actually scared, so I didn't look until after I was 18. Like when I did, I was like, "How's that guy doing that?" Because I'll never forget. I forgot who it was, but the tall guy, probably late 30s, early 40s. You know me, I had my second computer. I'm 21 years old. And he had one leg on a coffee table and the other leg on the arm of a couch. And he's just going at it with his coworker. And I'm like, if I tried to do that,
right?
Yeah, my back would break. I can't do that. Like, that's labor.
It's funny because most adult performers, when people ask us, what's your favorite position? We're like, anything on a bed. We never get to use a bed.
So you know what? That's actually legit. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Like right now, you can search for a scene and you can see somebody in a hammock. How are you doing that in a hammock?
Oh, yeah. I had some friends that were on top of a car in the desert and then butt naked fell over onto a cactus.
Ah! Oh, no, 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 right? No.
Pulling cactus needles out of bare ass. Tell us this isn't work.
Oof, no, no, no. Hard pass. Wow. That's horrible.
Right, and all that so someone can download it illegally and then fast forward to the end.
Actually, that's what.
And then wipe the screen off with a tissue afterwards.
Oof, that's actually what we need. We need more blooper reels from porn movies.
That would be awesome. Bitchin' blooper reels.
You have blooper. All right, I'm gonna check out the blooper reels because yeah.
I will break my code of ethics and I'll give you the blooper reels for free when I get home.
Oh, thank you. I'll send you a link. Because I don't know why in my head BDSM porn reels are going to be even more funny because like rope is involved.
There's some humorous moments. And like I've been tying people up for 2 decades, and every now and then I still can't find the end of the rope, fucking standing on them or whatever. Like, it isn't working.
Oh man! All right, so about how many hours would you say it takes of? Talking to the director, talking to your coworkers, talking, you know, getting to the scene, if any makeup, props, anything like that. How much of that does it actually take to make one shot, and how long would a movie be? Like, what's the time ratio?
Oh, well, you know, adult entertainment is a wide spectrum, just like regular entertainment. You've got indie films and you've got college students with a handy cam, mm-hmm. all the way up to major blockbuster, you know, multi-million dollar movies. I'm kind of on the low end of that spectrum. I got one camera guy, he's also my lighting guy, and I usually self-produce. Some customer offers to pay me to do a job and I do the job.
Mm-hmm.
So I show up like a half hour before, you know, a half hour early, and I move the furniture around, and my lighting guy moves the lights around, and the female talent shows up, and I show her the script, and less than an hour later, we're doing the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So in like a 5 hour day is a long day for me.
Okay.
On set, and I'll have up to 2 hours of footage by the end of that. So it's almost just a 2-to-1 ratio, which I think is pretty good for most people.
Yeah, so I hope everyone who...
I certainly know people that have been on set for 12 hours for a half-hour shoot. Whoa, I can't do that.
Yeah, I hope everybody listening is realizing how much work actually goes into making the movies that you all enjoy so much. And pay for. Everybody better be fucking paying for their porn. Pay for your porn.
You know, it's funny, because we all stole magazines when we were kids before the internet. It's not like ripping off porn is new.
Right.
I'm grateful that people do pay for it, and clearly people do, or I'd be out of a job. I do make money doing this.
Mm-hmm.
There is a culture that doesn't pay for porn, but they never did. So, yes, I think it's wrong, and I find it upsetting. And I'm really glad that over the years I've not found a whole lot of my stuff pirated on the internet anywhere. But Not that it's not a problem, but people do pay for porn. They do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wonder if that still goes back to the whole, like, it's not real work, so it doesn't matter if you illegally download it kind of a thing. You know, because, like, well, it's not like I'm taking anybody's labor because it wasn't...
Right? How many people illegally download major regular movies, like the blockbusters that come out in theaters? People do, but it's not the same percentage.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people are so ashamed of enjoying themselves alone that they don't want to put money into it and acknowledge that they're doing it.
That's a good point.
I think that's why people will go have unprotected sex drunk in a bar, because they're too ashamed of it to talk about it ahead of time and get tested and be responsible adults because they've been told it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
If we could tell them sex isn't bad and that it's good and right to negotiate and test and be mindful of your partners, I'd love to see a world where that was the norm.
That would be awesome.
And I think we can get there. That's why I volunteer for the center. That's why I talk to college kids and try and normalize the idea that there is nothing shameful or wrong about enjoying sex or enjoying porn or paying for things that make you happy.
I think you're far more optimistic than I am. I don't think we're going to get there, but I still do the work because it's the right thing to do. You know what I mean? Like,
sometimes we don't ask if it's possible. We just ask if it's the right thing to do.
Yes.
You're right. You're right. If we never get there, I can die satisfied that I tried.
Yes. Yes. Oh, mm-hmm. My goodness. All right. What else are we talking about? I don't know. We're just kind of chilling, right?
Yeah, I'm having a great time. I'm sitting in a Holiday Inn in Evanston in the middle of nowhere with not a lot better to do. So I'm having a great old time hanging out with you.
There's not a lot going on in Evanston. It is Evanston.
There's Illuminati's nearby. So I'm going to go get me some pizza.
Yes, Illuminati's is amazing.
I love your town.
Yeah, it's fun.
I never had actual deep dish pizza before I came to Chicago.
Really?
So the first time I ever had deep dish was here, and I won't have it anywhere else now.
I think that I mean,
you can get Chicago-style deep dish in Los Angeles, but I won't.
I think that I grew up spoiled with that because it was always here, so I kind of just took it for granted, you know? I'm like, doesn't everybody have it? What do you mean other people don't have it? What the hell? You know? But,
you can have it, but it's not like, it's not as good.
No, wait, now.
Certainly don't have Illuminati's on the West Coast.
Now, do you like Asian food? You should go to Joy Yee. They're amazing.
There's where being a Los Angeles makes me too snobby. I can't eat sushi outside of L.A.
What?
It's too good there. Outside of Japan, Los Angeles has the best sushi in the world. Because we're on the Pacific Rim and the Japanese-American culture started there, you find the best sushi restaurants outside of Japan in Los Angeles. So I'm just too spoiled to eat it anywhere else.
I need that fucking quote William, help me out.
Which one?
That we just said I'm too spoiled to eat sushi outside of Los Angeles. I want that. I'm gonna just randomly play that. I want it in the soundboard. Oh. I'm gonna just randomly fucking play that. That was awesome.
That's my privilege, Shelly. I'm too spoiled to eat fish somewhere else.
That was hilarious, actually. Oh man. All right. I don't know why that's like too funny to me. Did anybody who's in the comment section have questions? Stop texting me. Holy cow. Did anybody else have questions? Because like there's some folks watching being amused, I'm sure.
Yes, and there were and in the chat room we do have Fallon Matthew of FallonKitty.com and she writes some erotica books that folks can snag on the Amazon.com. Go ahead and support folks that are working. It is labor.
Yes. Yes.
Do I? I feel like I know her Twitter handle. That sounds really familiar.
You might.
I think we might be Twitter buddies.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Fallon, can you post your Twitter handle in the chat room? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might be. Which is kind of fun. Like, eventually, I think that I've found, like, a really solid Twitter circle at this point. Like, I like it. I mean, except for Elle, who keeps fucking showing up, but... Yeah, I've that is a white sex worker from Canada who I think exists to be a thorn in my side. Yeah, she's one of those people who's like, don't talk about racism in the industry. It's divisive. Like, no. But yeah, that's a whole other situation. Anyways,
indeed. Well,
no, there's a lot of really great sex workers.
There is a lot of racism in the industry. There's an ugly amount of racism in the industry. But again, to what are you comparing it? The regular world?
Right. See.
There's racism everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, folks don't want to admit that, though.
Yeah, it happens. It's ugly. And because we're such public figures, I feel like we have some potential to change things or to set new patterns of thought in motion. Like, I've certainly done scenes with people who were not pasty white like me, mm-hmm. but you'll never see me advertising in that way.
Right.
I've never used the concept of interracial in my marketing campaigns, nor have I ever referred to someone by their race as a selling point.
Mm-hmm.
I just refer to them by name because they're gorgeous, and hopefully people know who they are. And again, the ridiculous hypocrisy that it's only interracial if it's certain genders on certain other genders and the race profile matches up. Like if it's an Asian guy and a Mexican girl, nobody calls that interracial.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
why is that? Isn't that exactly what that means? No, we're just going to not. Okay, whatever.
Well, so we could trace interracial back to the concept of the one drop rule.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go. You got to stop trying to challenge these frameworks. We take our racism very seriously in this country, Tim. Stop it. it's real. Oh, wait,
Okay, Fallon Matthew in the chat space said there's this whole race play market that is lucrative. Apparently, academics have swarmed to intellectualize it. And Anne said that Canada also has Megan Murphy and Lindsay Shepherd too. Yes, Megan.
Oh, Megan Murphy.
Murphy. She's anti all sex work. Megan Murphy just may be anti sex. Megan Murphy may be anti Megan Murphy because Megan Murphy came from sex. I don't know.
I remember she's the one who does, what is it, Feminist Current?
Yes.
Is that her? Yeah, where they're very much on the anti-sex worker, the whole, like, what the fuck was the argument? They actually made an argument from a Marxist feminist perspective that sex workers do not control the means of, they don't own themselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm, the sex workers do not control the means of production. I don't know. I thought I owned all my genitals. I thought everybody.
The truth?
You know, they
when
just.
When you actually are the means of production. Wow.
Yeah. Like.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like an.
This whole. I know. It's weird. This whole time I thought everybody.
Now, again, it's not that I've never.
Oh, go ahead.
It's not that I've never run across somebody who was clearly working for someone else under a condition that they were not thrilled about. I mean, it's not that I've never seen that. I know pimps exist, and I've seen them. But in the vast majority, at least within the adult entertainment, it's such an exception. It is not the rule.
Yeah, and I just, you know, it's you have to fit that narrative, though. If they come out of that and admit all these stereotypes and stigmatizing things they think and say about sex workers aren't true, then they might actually have to change their point of view and respect sex workers, and they really just don't want to. Like, I'm going to hold on to all these myths, you know? And it's wild to me because sex workers are very vocal, I think, in general as a group, especially on social media, talking about, you know, this is actually what it's like in the industry, or this is how I got into the industry, or I'm here consensually, or this is why I'm choosing this particular line of work. I'm like, nope, you're all trafficked. You're all brainwashed. You have Stockholm Syndrome. You don't know what you're doing, you know.
All right, and I'm going to respond.
If I never hear the word traffic again, it'll be too soon.
I'm going to respond to Jan Loco in the chat space. This is just off a very quick Yahoo search. Jan Loco in the chat space asked, are there advocacy groups for intersectional porn? And just going off of something that was put up in 2015, just off a quick Yahoo search, the Queer Culture Collection, and it's English and Women's Studies, Introduction to Lesbian and Gay Studies. And these might be the folks you want to check out for that. I don't know of anything else already off the top of my head. And just thinking of like the way the term intersectional was used there, this is not a critique, this is not a call out, but just thinking about like, because intersectional, and Nayeli Bailey and Glenn Ford brought this up about 6 weeks ago recently on the Black Agenda Report program, that a reminder that intersectionality is really supposed to be used mostly by lawyers working with their clients, because it's a legal argument for like why someone was discriminated against, and then it kind of became branding for folks. And so yeah, remember, intersectionality is a legal argument, not a sociological argument. I think that's what I'm going for, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of folks don't know that. And I also think a lot of folks just say intersectionality when they mean any sort of intersection, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because, of course, the term was made specifically to refer to misogyny and racism faced by Black women, you know, in that particular context, because the racism Black women face isn't necessarily the exact racism Black men face, and it's not the racism that other people of color who aren't Black face, and then, of course, the sexism that Black women face is not identical to the racism that women, or sorry, to the sexism women of other races face, right? Because, like, it all comes down to, like, this weird thing of, like, yeah, white women suffer from, you know, sexism too because of patriarchy, but there's worlds of difference between benevolent sexism and infantilizing white women because of benevolent sexism and patriarchy, and the way Black women are treated as being seen as low value, hypersexual, you know, all those sort of things. So, yeah, there's a lot going on there.
the Black side of things, the Black side of things, it represents how our particular relationship with how we were forced into westernized, industrialized feudalism that we call capitalism. And so to this day, everything we do is supposed to be monetized. That's why a guy can't just be a rapper, right? Like, I go to work, I get a little change in my pocket and handle the bills, and I also like to rap. But because I'm not monetizing my raps, someone will slur me as a struggle rapper, as a Black person, as a Black man. And then, like say a Black woman's going to college. Well, she can't be going to college like Fallon Matthew to be a sociologist and argue and fight for social justice. You have to be going to college so that you can go work for a corporation and have a career. Everything we do has to be monetized. We can never just be satisfying ourselves with activity and enjoying ourselves. It always has to generate a profit.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think that that is also part of the problem, flipping it back to sex work, is that there is a lot of stigma around the industry because it's one of the ways you're not supposed to make money, right? Like, you're kind of independent. Yeah. You maybe get to have a little bit more flexibility with your schedule than people in other professions. You know, you might be able to pick and choose a little bit more about what you want to do, like what area, because sex work is huge, right? Because there's pornography, and then there's like camming, and there's, you know, phone work, and then there's actual escorting and sugaring, and, you know, like there's all these different kinds of sex work. So it's like you might be able to do things or have a little bit more freedom than other folks who work like a typical 9-to-5 job in a cubicle, you know? And I think that there's a level of resentment about that when it comes to sex workers. Like, you're not laboring the right way. You're not allowed to have any freedom while you're laboring.
Exactly.
Like, you're not doing it right. You're not miserable enough.
Societal box. You're not miserable enough. We're out of the societal box. A woman could be a stripper working 3 nights a week for a couple of hours and make enough money to support 3 kids and start a college fund, and people will shame her for doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, she's doing everything right. She's spending time with her kids and assuring a quality future for them and not working a 9-to-5 job. The only person who thinks she's doing something wrong is the guy stuck in the 9-to-5 job.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. And it's very, very interesting to me that people who are miserable where they are now because of those types of rules and regulations are angry at sex workers, like, but you're unhappy too. Why do you want me to be unhappy with you, you asshole?
Yeah.
And it looks like
we represent a freedom that most of society doesn't get. And there's danger in our lives because we're outside of the societal norm, but there's freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's both enticing and repulsive to the people that don't have it.
And it looks like I may have misunderstood Jan Loco's question in the chat room. Jan Loco came back and responded and said, I was thinking of the giant diversity of everyone can be in porn.
Oh.
Right? Mm-hmm. What's that speaking to? I think I'm still not understanding.
What was the first comment?
Let me run back to the original question. Said boobadoo. Are there advocacy groups for intersectional porn?
Oh, so like advocacy groups to have a more diverse range of people in porn? Was that the question?
Yeah. Jan Loco, let us know. Is that like to have a more diverse group of actors or actors? My bad, laborers.
Yeah, and you know, I do really get stuck on this idea that you know, sex work is wrong because that's the wrong way to make money, even though you are legitimately laboring, you're legitimately working. And you know, we've talked about it before the podcast, but you know, I keep getting stuck about the whole Bangladesh issue when they quote unquote rescued the poor sex workers from the brothel and then basically forced them to go work in a sweatshop that then collapsed and they died. It's like that didn't make anything better. It didn't help, you know. But it's just interesting to me that there are certain ways to make money. And of course, you know, a bunch of these, worth noting, a bunch of these advocacy groups that are saying, you know, sex work is bad, we need to rescue sex workers, they do support sweatshops and they do not support living wages.
Yep. And you know how in the sweatshops, none of the women or femme folks are getting sexually harassed, and there's no rape culture there. Not in the workplace.
Right, no, of course not.
Right? How dare you go be a porn performer? That's gross and sexist. Also, come work here, be underpaid and sexually harassed by your boss every day, because that's the right way to do it. Like, what the fuck? No.
Yeah,
no.
The American way.
It's horrible. Oh, yeah.
Totally true.
Oy. Oh.
Okay, Jan Loco said...
As to the question of... Oh, I was just going to respond to... Was it Jan Loco?
Yeah, she said to specify, she meant racial, queer, and class. Like to get those folks mm-hmm. in. So like more races and queer folks
uh-huh.
and folks that... are not of a more upper echelon in economics.
Yeah. I haven't seen a lot of advocacy groups. Why can I not say advocacy? What is my problem? I haven't seen a ton of groups, but I have seen there's a lot more independent porn media coming mm-hmm. out. And a lot of that is pretty diverse.
Yeah. This whole industry is changing rapidly, and I love watching it happen because the establishment is collapsing. The workers are controlling the means of production more than they ever have before. And if people do pay for their porn, the next step is you get to vote with your dollar.
Mm-hmm.
You find something you like, you buy it, people will make more of that.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's just, you know, Sports Illustrated and Playboy paradigm remains intact.
Mm-hmm.
But there is so much more queer, interracial, non-gender specific weird ass porn being made these days by people that are passionate about doing it. All you have to do is support them. Vote with your dollar.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And Fallon,
it's
Matthew,
really awesome to see.
FallonKitty.com asked, whatever happened to the strike? Is it still happening? Where are the dancers, models who are on strike? Colorism, etc. I think specifically talking about the New York strike of dancers.
There's been a few. I think there was one in New Orleans. There was one in LA. I don't know how long that one lasted. And then there was New York as well. Which, of course, it was strippers who were basically going on strike because clubs have a lot of racist policies and they tend to not give non-white workers, equal access to certain shifts. They were, mm-hmm. you know, like sending the black workers home or just not hiring black workers and women of color. So yeah, there's a lot of racism.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say that's what's tough about this particular podcast labor is getting updates to the stories we cover because no one actually cares about them. Like,
yeah,
like I'll search the terms and the names and like, because especially on these rapist cops,
yeah,
and all you really get is another outlet covered the same story, and it's just a reverberation of that thing happened. But it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, but what happened? Like, the latest I got on Daniel Holzklob was that he disappeared in jail. Like,
yeah.
How? Yeah, it's tough finding these updates.
Huh. Yeah, speaking of which,
we're a delightful headline, but there's never any follow-up.
Yeah, that is really a problem. And I think that it's, you know, we need more independent media, really. Or at least we need more non-corporate-owned media so we can have folks covering these mm-hmm. stories, you know? Because it's very easy to make a quick headline about sex workers and make it something that's, you know, provocative or something that's, like, you know, very quickly will grab your attention, but nobody actually cares about the issues themselves, you know? It was just... It was almost like clickbait because the majority of the workers that were on strike were black. So it was just basically like, haha, stupid strippers, and then a bunch of racial slurs and slut shaming. Like, that's what happened. And then that was the end of it, you know? Yep. And it's like, hey, these are actual people. They have rights. You know, they're trying to live. They're trying to survive under this bullshit capitalistic system that we have. Like, don't shame them for trying to survive. And there's no need to go into the slut shaming. There's no need to go into the racist shit. Like, just fucking let it go. Let people live, you know? But no.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Maybe we could support and humanize each other rather than making each other the butt of every uncomfortable joke.
That would be nice.
Now,
wouldn't that be nifty?
Tim Woodman. Another one about the labor, right? Because it's a job, it is work. Like, so mm-hmm. there's a new employee on the job. Like, is it like other jobs where you get trained for maybe 4 to 6 weeks? Like, is anything like that going on at all there?
I really wish there was. There is very little. There is a group, there's an advocacy group, actually, if I could say advocacy, called the Adult Performer Advocacy Group that does provide resources and education for performers for free. But getting the average starry-eyed teenager that wants to start doing this for a living to sit down and learn how to do it, it's not that easy. So it's mostly mentorship, mostly luck of the draw. If you show up to set with somebody who will kind of take you under their wing and try and teach you how this is done. But your first day on the job, you're doing the job. There's no training period.
Oh, that's tough. Yeah, like it's
it is.
Do you know off the top of your head the name of the advocacy group?
It's called Adult Performer Advocacy Committee. They're on social media. They're on Twitter. They're called APAC Social.
All right, folks, that's Adult Performer Advocacy Committee. You can find them in your social networks, APAC Social. Find out how you can support yep. those folks. I'll definitely...
Oh,
that would be really great.
Yeah. Damn, they only have 7,000 followers.
Well, let's give them some more.
It's like, that shit makes me so...
Well, they don't show tips, you know. They're actually here to help.
So that shit makes me so sad. You're like, oh, this person, like, there's a person or group doing this really amazing thing. Oh, right. And they're like, oh, and nobody's paying attention to them because they're doing an amazing thing. All right.
Yeah. It is an amazing thing. I go to the meetings every month just to support. I mean, it's not like they don't really offer me anything, but I can put a butt in a seat and help them out and try and, you know, signal boost their work or whatever else.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah, and then if there's a way
it's so frustrating.
This
I've been doing this for so long, and I see so many girls that with a little direction and guidance could be set for life.
Mm-hmm.
You could work in this industry for a little while, and with some little financial counseling and a little life choice counseling, you can make your own money, you can make bank, and walk away from sex work when you want on your own terms.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody teaches them how to do that. So APAC is trying to help do that, and I really applaud their efforts. I do everything I can to help.
Yeah, and you know what? In about 7-8 hours, The Patreon for folks that support this program will kick over to the PayPal automatically. And we need to find these folks and support ourselves. Well, again, vote with the dollar.
Yes.
We're going to vote for them. Mm-hmm. APAC Social.
That's very cool.
Nice.
All right. I think I think that's about the deal right there. That's so. A good wine cellar right there. This was Tim Woodman. And Tim Woodman, do you have social media anywhere that or a website where folks can check you out?
Absolutely. My social media, my website, and everything's all the same. It's Pro Villain. I'm a professional bad guy, so I took Pro Villain. Just make sure you spell villain right, because people are dumb. VILLAIN.com or at Twitter at Pro Villain. You can find me there.
Blam.
Yes.
Tim Pro Villain, ironically, does everything to not be a villain.
Yes.
It's outstanding. All right. Thank you for coming on.
It is a little
ironic.
Thank
you. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, I had a great time, you guys. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Thanks for coming on.
All right. Have a good one there.
And I will see you tomorrow, Phoenix.
All right. Awesome.
Thank you, sir.
Peace.
Bye-bye.
That's fun.
All right. So that was Tim Woodman and Phoenix Kalita, the original uppity negress, being dangerous alt-lefters. Talking about sex work, talking about how sex work is work. And note that Jan Logo said, ask your librarians to do the research for you.
Oh.
As far as like getting updates to stories.
Hmm.
If you can dig it. Hmm. Maybe you can't. I can. And it's winesolomedia.com, paypal.me/Phoenix and William, patreon.com/winesolomediafund, and APAC Social. We're going to have to go find them.
Yeah, I follow them on Twitter now.
Oh, you founded them.
I founded them.
Are they on the Facebooks?
Let me see.
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll dig it up, sniff it up, just like that. All right, and then I gotta wrap this up so I can get this podcast posted, and then go back to the factory and make sure that the world has more packages of Sour Patch Kids. This is my contribution. I'm doing great things.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And we got the machines up to we got all 6 machines in the machine room doing 80 pouches a minute. What's 6 times 8 is
48.
6 times 8 is 48. So 480 pouches of Sour Patch Kids a minute.
Who is eating that many Sour Patch Kids?
We're packaging for Halloween.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oof.
So You're welcome. I hope you enjoy your cavities. WineCellarMedia.com, Facebook Live. Let's go ahead and put an end to that. Bye-bye. End. All right. And podcast audio. You got to get the funk out of here. Whoa, what happened? Yo, where's my audio? My shit is not loud. All right. Well, fuck it. Have a good one.